A Very Silly Noble Thing. When Oscar got back to Chateau Buckle that night, he took a long bath, his cast wrapped in plastic and awkwardly sticking out of the water to keep it as dry as possible. When the water turned cold, he got out of the tub and slipped into clean pajamas and crawled into his bed. Then he took Wib from the nightstand and held the dog in his hand. "Hi," Oscar whispered into its small wooden ears. "It's been really, really hard day." A light knock at the door announced Bilious's presence. "Come in," Oscar said. Bilious came into the room and sat on the edge of Oscar's bed. "All clean?" he asked. Oscar nodded. "Comfy?" Oscar nodded. "Okay?" Oscar burst into tears. Bilious gently took Wib from Oscar's hand, set the dog on the nightstand, and hugged his son. "You did a very silly, reckless, dangerous thing today," Bilious said. "But you also did a brave, selfless, noble thing today." "Are you mad at me?" "Not at all. I wish you had told me what you'd found in Angus's study. I wish you had let me help you. But I understand why you didn't. I am so grateful that you are safe and unharmed." Bilious pulled away and gently tapped Oscar's cast. "Relatively," he added. "What if they never find any of the people who worked at Braun Industries? What if they never find Mr. Cleverer? What if nobody ever has to answer for what they did and the bad people just get away and nothing ever changes?" "Oscar, the truth will win out in the end. I have no doubt of it." "But what if it doesn't?" Oscar said. He was still crying. And now he had started to hiccup too. "What if they all get away with it?" "They won't," Bilious said firmly. "I won't let them. Nico won't let them. And I know you won't let them either." Oscar took a deep breath, trying to calm himself down. "Finally," he whispered, "I just can't believe Mr. Cleverer would do any of this." "I know," Bilious said. "But sometimes people lose their way. He just lost his way."
"Understatement of the year," Oscar said. Bilious chuckled sadly.
"Get some sleep now, all right, Oscar? You need your rest. It's been a long, difficult day." But Oscar didn't go to sleep. He found that as soon as he was alone, as soon as Bilious left his bedroom, he was wide awake. He couldn't seem to get Petra and Eunice's words out of his head. "I can't wait to see what you do next." What would he do next? He wouldn't let Braun Industries get away with this. He would make sure each and every person responsible was caught and punished. He would never stop looking for them. Oscar opened his curtains and let the silver moonlight fall across his bed. He held Wib again. And then he did what he loved more than anything else in the world. He got a block of wood and he made a carving. It wasn't the easiest thing in the world to carve, mostly one-handed, but Oscar managed. He held the wood in his left hand, and he used his right hand to whittle. He didn't really know what it was at first. Sometimes it was like that. He would let his whittling knife move with the slightest pressure from his hand. It was like the knife itself had a mind of its own, a heart of its own, a soul of its own. He watched long, thin shavings of fragrant wood fall onto the bed around him. He saw a body start to form, plump and round and long. He saw a fin and eyes and the smooth slice of a gill. When it was done, it was a fish. Oscar hadn't carved a fish. Rather, the fish had unearthed itself from the wood, springing to life, spreading its outer layers to reveal its true form. It was a long and sturdy carving, about 8 inches in total length, and the fish's tail was curved as if it in mid-stroke, giving it the shape of a hook or a... And then, sitting on his bed with a broken arm and shower-wet hair and tired eyes, Oscar Buckle had the best idea in the history of all the ideas that had ever been had on the entire planet of Erd, in his opinion, and in my opinion, too. In one fluid motion, he jumped out of his bed and ran to find Bilious.
He was holding the fish. Next chapter, the handle. The next morning, very bright and very early, Oscar and Bilious set off for the Buckle Umbrellas workshop. The sun was out, but Bilious still carried an umbrella at his side. Out of habit, maybe. Or maybe because even before the weather machine, things in Rowan did tend toward the rainy side. And you never knew what a sunny morning might turn into. Oscar had the fish carving in his right pocket, and he kept patting it with his hand to make sure it was safe. When they reached the storefront, Oscar got to work immediately. Bilious was quiet, watchful, amused. He helped Oscar when Oscar needed help. The cask kept getting in the way of things, and he stepped back when Oscar said he could do something on his own. Luckily, there were a few almost completed umbrellas for Oscar to work with. He chose a spillin, which was the umbrella Sage carried. It took him about 45 minutes, and when he was done, he handed the umbrella to Bilious. Bilious took it reverently, opening the umbrella's canopy, holding it in his hand, closing it up again. In Roan, there are no silly superstitions about opening an umbrella indoors. And then he looked up at Oscar and said, "This is perfect." And Oscar could tell from the expression on Bilious's face that his father was telling the truth. Oscar took the spillin back from Bilious and stroked the soft wooden handle, which was, of course, the fish that Oscar had carved the night before. It was the perfect shape, the perfect weight, the perfect whimsical addition to the spillin's length and size. He hadn't known at first what he was carving, and then he thought he was carving a simple fish. And then he'd realized what it had really been. The handle of an umbrella. Next chapter. Curious Things. That afternoon, Oscar walked to East Market for lunch. The day had stayed fair and warm, but there was a certain smell to the air. It would weep later. This, of course, Oscar's favorite rain of all. A gentle, welcome sprinkle. Oscar knew. But it would be a welcome weep. Nobody in the alley ever really minded a weep. Oscar was just passing Crow when the front door of the apartment building opened up and Gregory Fairmountain and Tim Clint came striding outside. The three boys saw each other at the same time and they all froze. Oscar tensed to run. But then something curious happened. Gregory stepped forward and gently scuffed the ground with the toe of his shoe, not quite looking at Oscar when he spoke. "I heard my mom talking to Sage's mom," he said. "I heard what you did. That was really, really cool." "Thanks," Oscar said. His mouth was dry, and he still felt like running away, but he made himself hold his ground. "I still think you're a dweeb," Tim said, but he was smiling. When Oscar reached East Market, he felt light and happy, and then another curious thing happened. It seemed that everyone he passed in the market, and being Sunday, it was quite busy, had either reached out to touch his good arm, or else smiled at him, or else nodded their head as he passed, or else pressed their palms together and bowed their head at him in quiet respect. By the time he reached Nico's booth, he was feeling overwhelmed. He was happy to find that Nico was there. "My small friend," Nico said warmly. "How are you feeling today?" "Everybody is looking at me," Oscar said quickly. "It's like, I think they all know." Nico laughed his signature deep booming laugh. "Oscar," he said, "this is the toe. News travels fast here. Of course they all know. Now, come here. I have a little something for you." Oscar stepped into Nico's stall and sat on a wooden stool while Nico rummaged around in a crate. When Nico turned around, he was holding not one, not two, but three stone fruits. Oscar's mouth dropped open. "Nico, are those all for me? I can't take those." "Oscar, you brought back the sun," Nico said, "and that is worth all the stone fruit I can get my hands on." Next chapter, a surprise visitor. That night, around dinner time, there was a knock on Chateau Buckle's door. Oscar answered it, and and he gave a happy squeal of surprise to see Sage and Dot, repaired. Behind Sage stood Miss Clever, holding Arthur. The elevator was working, Sage said with a grin. Can you believe it? Hello, Oscar, Miss Clever said, stepping forward. Hello, Bilious. I hope you'll pardon the intrusion, Bilious. I thought we might go for a bit of a walk. It's weebing outside now, but it's a nice night. She gave Bilious a look that clearly meant, let's give them a few minutes alone. Sure thing, Bilious said, slipping into his shoes. Sage came into the living room, and Oscar closed the door behind her. It had only been 24 hours since he'd seen her, but it felt like an eternity, and it was so nice to be with her now. He sat down on the couch, and she faced him, her hands folded on her lap. Hi, she said. Hi, Oscar said. He wanted to show her the umbrella he'd made, and he wanted to tell her about his encounter with Gregory and Tim, and he wanted to tell her about everyone in the toe touching him or thanking him or smiling at him. And maybe most importantly, he wanted to tell her about seeing Eunice again. But he didn't say anything, because he knew, just by looking at her, that she had big news to share. We're moving, she said finally. Great, Oscar said. Back to the alley. But Sage smiled sadly and shook her head. Commerce City? She shook her head again. Well, where? We're moving to Baudelaire, she said quietly. Baudelaire is the closest city to Rhone and the largest city in Terra. It's about a half day's car ride to the southeast between the two cities. There isn't much of anything other than farmland and the occasional small farm town. Baudelaire, Oscar replied, not sure he'd heard her correctly. My mother thinks after everything that's happened that it would be best to have a fresh start. She said she has family there too, Sage explained. Her mom, her sisters, never met them. She's from Baudelaire originally. Did you know that? No, Oscar said. I've never actually been, Sage continued. I've always wanted to go. Did you know that they have an entire school just for architecture? Oscar smiled. Sage, that sounds amazing. Won't be so bad being that far away, Sage said, and Oscar couldn't help noticing how her lower lip had started to quiver. Look, I brought you something. She twisted around and reached into her backpack. Oscar half expected her to pull out a crowbar, but instead, she removed a telephone. It's from the house in Rhone Piers. I took it. When I get to Baudelaire, I'll send a letter with my number. This way, we can keep in touch. We can still send letters and stuff, but this is nice to have too, right? Oscar took the telephone. It was a soft, butter yellow, and he wanted to hug it to his chest. This is perfect, he said. They haven't found him, she continued, her voice quieter now. The Rab have been keeping us posted, but it turns out the house in Rhone Piers is in my mom's name. Anyway, almost like my dad wanted to protect us. Something like this happened. We don't want it, obviously. So we thought you and Bilious could have it instead. You want us to give us your home? Oscar squeaked. It might have been our house for a moment, Sage corrected him quietly. But it was never our home. Oscar and Bilious living in Rhone Piers, in a big fancy mansion with a buzzball hoop and a lawn. Wasn't that supposed to be the dream? Wasn't Rhone Piers supposed to be the end goal? And Oscar swore he opened his mouth to say yes, but he was surprised to find himself saying no instead. No, I don't think we want to move, he said. Sage smiled. I had a feeling you'd say that. She bit her bottom lip, and it destroyed Oscar to see how sad she was, how broken. I asked my mom how much she knew, about what my dad was doing, about what Braun Industries was doing, about everything. And she said she didn't know anything. She thought he was working on factory updates, engineering a new assembly line, that sort of thing. Do you believe her? I do, Sage said. She seems just as sad as I am. I'm so sorry, Sage. She shrugged, not quite meeting his eyes. It's a lot, she said. It's a lot to try and process. There's more, too. Oscar didn't know how there could possibly be more, but he waited patiently as Sage shifted, gathering her thoughts. We were talking about family. kind of nervous to meet my grandmother for the first time, my aunts. I have some cousins, too. We were talking about my father and what he did, and then she showed me this photo of her father. Sage reached into the pocket of her jacket and pulled out a black and white photo. She handed it to Oscar. It showed a tall, skinny man standing in front of the clock tower at the night market. He wore robes and sturdy boots, and he had... "This is a Farsouthian," Oscar said, noting the man's slender, pointed ears. "Right," Sage said, tucking her thick, curly hair behind her left ear, the slightly pointed ear. "So Unas was right. You are part Farsouthian." Oscar told Sage all about his encounter with Unas outside the hospital. Sage didn't seem that surprised. Sage took the picture back and looked at the Farsouthian man, her grandfather. "I guess he abandoned the family when my mom was young. She always found it too painful to talk about. So she just made up the story about shutting my ear in a door and decided never to tell me the truth until now. Unas said we were all connected. Do you think she could be a cousin, maybe? Who knows?" "Wow." Sage laughed. "Wow" is the exact right word for it. She smiled, but then her smile faded and she looked sad again. "My mom," she said. She said he's not a terrible man, you know? My dad? But that over the years, he just became obsessed with money and status and power. And he loved me. He loved all of us, but he loved all that stuff just a little more. Oscar reached over and took Sage's hand. He didn't know what to say, so he didn't say anything. They just sat in silence for a few moments. "I should probably go," Sage said. "We're leaving early in the morning." "I'm going to miss you," Oscar said. Felt like the most useless, obvious thing in the world, but he thought it was important to say. "I'm going to miss you too," Sage said. "But we're going to talk every day, okay?" "Deal," Oscar said. He leaned forward and they hugged each other. And when they pulled away, Oscar's eyes were red and Sage's eyes were wet. "Going to leave now," she said, "before I start crying." A few minutes after that, after Sage had left, Bilius came back. He seemed a little flustered and out of sorts. Before he could say a word, Oscar said, "Don't worry, Dad. I said we didn't want it." Bilius froze. "You did?" "Yeah, I did." "Me too," Bilius said. "I said we didn't want it too." "Leave Chateau Buckle? No, thank you." Bilius nodded. "I feel the exact same way." Next chapter, Monkwood. After dinner and a game of flock, Oscar took a long bath and then went into his room. His bed was covered with sawdust and wood shavings from the night before, and he smiled to himself as he cleaned it up, sweeping everything into a small wastebasket. He wasn't feeling super tired yet, and he thought he might try carving another handle, a bird with a wing curved to fit perfectly in one's hand, or a long, curled-up cat. And then he remembered the block of monkwood. He fished it out from under his bed and held it in his hands. He had forgotten how almost black the wood was, how smooth the grain was, like a block of butter or ice, but slightly warm to the touch. He sat on his bed and held it, wondering what it wanted to be, what secret shape was hidden inside it. "I'd love to know what you find in that wood," the owner of the monkwood shop had said. The night market felt like 100 years ago. Oscar wondered when the next one would be. Would he be able to go? Would Sage come back for it? Sage. He missed her already. He'd taken a couple of her drawings from Fort Clever Buckle. He'd been pleasantly surprised to find that the fort had survived the blunder wheel. And he had hung them on his bedroom wall. Fireworks. The block of monkwood hummed in his hands. He started carving. The wood was unlike anything he'd ever worked with before. It was soft but strong, giving but firm, and almost entirely free of grain or knots. His carving started to take shape, and even though there was still work to be done and sandpaper would be needed to smooth the skin of the animal, the magic of the monkwood was already apparent. The beast's chest rose and fell with its deep, powerful breathing. Every few minutes, if you listened carefully, you could hear the crash of the waves on a distant shore. was an orca, a killer whale. Oscar smiled, remembering their journey through the abandoned aquarium, the way the life-size orca had almost given him a heart attack. Not Sage, though. She hadn't been rattled at all. She would love this. He'd mail it to her new home in Blotterdam. Oscar put the carving aside and snuggled under his covers. The wib had stopped and the night was quiet and peaceful. It was strange, learning how to fall asleep without the sound of rain outside his window. But for the second night in a row, Oscar managed to do just that. Next chapter, partners. Over the next weeks, Oscar carved a dozen more handles for his father's umbrellas. All manner of beautiful and intricate wooden pieces that perfectly complemented Bilius's work. The Rab stopped by Chateau Buckle often. They had found multiple tunnels in Braun Industries, just like Oscar had predicted. Some of those were miles and miles long, leading straight out of Rhône and into the country beyond it. "But we're not giving up," the Rab has promised. "We'll find them." Oscar wasn't giving up either. He had taken to visiting the Alley's library whenever he had a free hour, researching the history of Braun Industries. He was sure he'd find something that would give them a clue to where everyone had gone. One morning, when Oscar and Bilius arrived at the shop, they found a small line of people waiting outside for them to open. The next day, a woman brought her dog into the shop and asked if Oscar could carve a handle in the pup's likeness. Oscar did. The woman paid handsomely for it. People came from all over, from the Alley, from Commerce City, from Rhône Piers. Business boomed. Oscar was happy, really happy. He was doing what he loved more than anything else in the world. He was carving. Then one day, Bilius sent Oscar to the shop ahead of him. "I have an errand to run," Bilius said. Oscar didn't think much of it. He went to the shop and opened it, turning on the lights and flipping over the close sign to read "open." He sat down at the workbench and took up a carving he had started the day before. It was a giraffe. The long, slender neck would make the perfect curved handle for a lighter umbrella, like a genel or a mist. He quickly lost himself in the art of carving. He was hardly aware when the bell above the door tinkled, and Bilius finally arrived, holding two cups of hot chocolate and a pastry for each of them. "Put that down, will you?" Bilius asked. "I'd like to talk to you about something." Oscar set the giraffe aside. He took his hot chocolate and waited for Bilius to speak. "I've just come from a meeting with Principal Gunderson," Bilius said. "Oh?" Oscar said, taking a bite of the pastry. "How's he?" "He's fine, just fine," Bilius said. He seemed a little flustered and he kept pacing around the front of the workbench. "He says he's excited to see you back in 2 weeks for your uppers." Oscar dropped the pastry onto the workbench. "Sorry?" he said, convinced he'd heard his father wrong. "I never wanted to pull you out of school, Oscar. I hope you know that. I did what I thought I had to do to survive. But things have changed now. Business is good, really good." Bilius paused. He cleared his throat, and Oscar thought his father might have been trying not to cry. "Your mother would have wanted you to finish school. It's what I want for you too. And I think it's what you want." "It is," Oscar said. Bilius lifted an Enmerol umbrella off the workbench. Yesterday, Oscar had attached the handle, a bear, stretched tall on its hind legs. "These handles, Oscar, they are a stroke of genius. I'm so proud of you. You've been carving for your entire life, working on your craft since you were old enough to safely hold a knife. I hope you'll still carve handles for my umbrellas. But I also hope you'll carve whatever you want to, whenever the inspiration hits." "Of course I'll carve more handles, Dad," Oscar said. "But I don't think I can go back to school. The shop has been so busy lately. You need someone to help you." "Yes, the shop has been busy," Bilius agreed. "That's why I'm interviewing people today, for an apprentice position."
"But I'm your apprentice."
"No," Bilius said gently. "You're not my apprentice anymore. You're my partner." And, as if on cue, the door pushed open. The bell tinkled again, and a young woman danced into the shop. She was smiling and rosy-cheeked as she said, "I'm here for my interview. Oh, I'm Sally. I should have started with that. Are you Bilius?
It's so nice to meet you. Wow, it smells so nice in here. Okay, I'll just be quiet until you're ready. Oh, hello, are you Oscar? I'm such a big fan of your carvings. Oh, wait, am I interrupting you? I think I'm interrupting you. Okay, I'll really be quiet now. Don't mind me. You won't even know I'm here. Sally turned around and busied herself with a barrel of tranquilumpets, examining one under the pretense of giving Oscar and Bilious time to finish their conversation. I like her, Bilious mouthed to Oscar. Me too, Oscar mouthed back. Then he said in a quiet voice, are you sure? Positive, Bilious said. Now get back to work, please. I want that giraffe finished by noon. Sally, let's take a walk around the block, shall we? Such a lovely day. And it was a lovely day. Oscar stood in the open door of the shop, watching Bilious and Sally as they walked south through the alley. Around them, people bustled in and out of Finch and Cardinal. Some of them had beach bags, heading to the shore to catch a few rays of the newly liberated sun. From Bleak Beach, they'd be able to see the gray lighthouse, clear as day now that there weren't any clouds. Maybe Oscar would head to the beach when he was done at the shop. He could wade into the water, calmer now without so many storms. Maybe, if he waded out far enough, and was still enough, and patient enough, he could catch a glimpse of the bioluminescent fish. Oscar closed his eyes. There was a soft, warm breeze in Rowan today. The sun fell on his face, warming his skin. The sun. The sun. The sun. Thank you to our Central Sockeye for joining us with One School, One Book. We appreciate the support from our PAC and our librarian for organizing this great experience for everyone. We hope that this fosters a love of reading and you continue to explore the things that bring you curiosity, that you ask questions to be open to your learning, and you follow your heart. Oscar was able to solve a mystery and found a way to do something he loves. We hope that for you too.